I think she must have 80 pairs of shoes because she traveled so much. But she just had her 40th birthday, and they had 1,400 people on the beach at her party. And they couldn't, I couldn't get three if I paid them to come out, you know. So I'm looking forward to hearing her. I've heard her tapes, and I think you're going to be really delighted. I give you Liz B. Hollis, New York.
Thank you. I'd like to say good evening to each and everyone. My name is Elizabeth Bailey. I'm called Liz in AA, and I stick to Liz. It sounds better than what I have been called. And I'm a definite alcoholic, and my anonymity has been shot to hell for a very long time. So hi to everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the committee, Lindsay and Richard, Margie and George, for all the calls and the letters that you have sent to me. I would like to thank so many of you here this weekend for the love that you have shown me. I like all my New Yorkers, and especially Hermina and Diane, who traveled 18 hours to be here with me on a train. Would you mind standing up, please? I'd like the rest of our New Yorkers to stand up. Come on here. Yeah, come on, Stan. Yeah, there they are. That's right. You know, I don't take that for granted. I think that's one of the greatest honors that you could bestow upon me. I'd like to thank Bob, the speaker, last night. I amened him to death. I really enjoyed him tremendously. I know I'm leaving out someone because I have so many to say thank you to. My couple today that was with me for lunch, I called him a politician tonight. He looks so good. I don't know what he's running for, but it's all right, you know. But again, thanks to all of you for being here. I call conventions the meet. I don't want to forget Roy. Roy treated me to ice cream last night. Thank you, Roy. And I didn't get a chance to say, there he is. I didn't get you. You know, there was a minister preaching, and he says, if you drink alcohol, you're doomed to die. And a little old lady down front, she said, amen. He said, now if you smoke those cigarettes, you're doomed to die. And the little old lady, she said, amen. He said, now if you're chewing tobacco, she said, look at that. He stopped preaching and gone to meddling. So I'm going to go to meddling. Don, I don't want to forget you and my friend either that took me out for breakfast this morning. I had a tremendous breakfast with Don and his friend. And for all those that sat in the hospitality room with me today, it was a tremendous day. I've just enjoyed you. They tell me to tell what I used to be like, how I found the program, and what the program has done for me. And I'm the oldest of five children. I was born in Brooklyn. I was raised in Manhattan on 163rd between Amsterdam and Edgecombe. My dad was a pitiful drunk. I'm not allowed to call anyone an alcoholic but myself. And I used to grieve about my dad's drinking. And I watched the policeman beat him with the billies and the blood would spatter. I watched neighbors hit him with frying pans and the blood would spatter. And I watched my dad come out of Mother Cabrina Hospital many, many times, wrapped up like a mummy. I grieved about his drinking. I'm ever grateful that I was in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous when my dad hung himself out at Central Islip. To this moment, I believe that if I had been actively drinking, I would have tried to drink myself to death about my dad. I was the oldest, and he loved me, and I loved him dearly. I have never seen my mother take a drink in my entire life. And for many, many 24 hours, I was always wishing I could give her two lousy drinks and bring her to hell into this program. She could have used the whole 12 steps and the whole 12 traditions. My mom passed away 5 years ago, 5 days, 3 days short, really, of being 95 years old. I picked up my first drink at the age of 12 years old, and as I look back, I was a stone alcoholic at 12 years old. I do not know anything about social drinking. I don't know about crossing any lines. I've seen a hell of a lot of lines, but I don't know about crossing any. And my mom received ingredients from the welfare, such as rice and raisins, and she made this rice wine in a large crockery. Now, she left Marion and I, a little girlfriend of mine, to sieve this rice wine through cheesecloth. Marion sieved and sipped two drinks, and she went to hell on home. But you know, I sieved and sipped, honey. And I just kept sieving and I sipped. And I sieved and I sipped. And I sieved and I sipped. And I put on a drunk at 12 that was a drunk. And of course, my mom lectured to me all night long. And I had the nerve to go out the next day and snap my fingers and shake myself and tell my friends what a ball I had. I don't even remember what the hell happened. And that began to be the pattern of my life. If you didn't drink to get drunk and pass out, you didn't say too much for me. Believe me. I began to sell King Kong booze at the age of 14. I want you to believe it was King Kong. It stood you straight and it knocked the hell out of you, too. And I bought it from the man who made it in the bathtub next door. I bought it by the gallon. I was selling it for 40 cents a cream pitcher. Now, someone suggested to me to take mayonnaise, olive oil, butter, cream, line yourself up, Liz. You know how they tell you to eat a good meal? Honey, that King Kong was so powerful, it went all through the mayonnaise, the olive oil, the butter, cream. So I stopped taking that sick stuff. I drank me some booze. I made some good money. Of course, at a certain hour, I had to be padlocked into a side room for my protection. Well, I got to tell you, one night I was laying out the window and I saw this sharp dude. Lord have mercy, he was so sharp. He was just tipping on down the street. Whew! I almost fell out the window, you know, he was so sharp. I saw this. I saw him with this big roll of money and I said, ooh, got me a live one. Woo! Always looking for a live one. I look for live ones in AA. I don't look for no deadheads in AA. Look for the live ones in here. Honey, I latched onto this dude. Oh, yes, I did. Because I saw that big roll of money. You know what I found out? It was a $5 bill around a lot of ones. But I latched onto him anyway. And I started to go from uptown New York down to the Lower East Side to all the joints. I'd give you a play, so you'd give me a play. Now, at the age of 14, I felt that I was a woman. I'm drinking, I'm partying, I'm hanging out. And this man happens to be 10 years older than myself. So I run up to my mom, and I ask her to sign for me to marry this man. And she says, oh, no, dear. Oh, my dear Barty. That man will have you out in the street, and you'll live a terrible life with that man. And I found out something about myself at the age of 14. Don't you ever, but never, tell me what not to do. Don't do that, because there's something in my nature. When you tell me what I can't do, I'm going to do it if I pay every price. I have stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous because it was suggested to me. Nobody has ever told me what to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you that right now. So I quit school at 14. I took sleep-in jobs. And I left New York on January 3rd, 1939, at 10 in the morning. I was standing in the courthouse in Baltimore, Maryland. And I was crying my heart out. And the minister stopped my wedding ceremony. He said, my dear young lady, would you mind just telling me what you're crying about? I said, well, at last I got him. I'm going to be honest with every one of you in this room this evening. That was the sorriest day of Mr. Bailey's life when he said, I do, to Liz Ulrich. Mr. Bailey never stopped crying from January 3rd, 1939, till he went home with the Lord August the 12th, 1986. That was a sorry day for that man. Now, I'm 17. Woo-hoo! I done got this marriage license. Now, I'm 71 now. Could you all picture what I was at 17? Woo! I done got this piece of paper, and I'm coming back to tear up New York. No more mama and no more neighbors, and nobody's going to tell me how to live. Got back to New York, and my husband gave up every liquor joint. He gave up gambling. He gave up hustling. He gave up going to parties, and he sat down. And I became a mental case at the age of 17. Because here I am raring to go, and this cat is sitting. And he sat from January 3rd, 1939, till he went home with the Lord August the 12th, 1996. And I just couldn't take that. I couldn't take it. So I started to nurse in my little drink through the week. I began to look forward to weekend drunks. Now I have to have a drink, to wash, to iron, to cook, to talk. Then I find myself on my knees all the time. Daddy, please forgive me. Please forgive me. I don't want to drink like this. I don't want to act like this. But he would tell you 20 minutes to an hour, my thinking would go off and I would be off to the races again. I continue to drink. I switch from brand to brand. And of course, now I'm watching a change come over me. Every word came out of my mouth was a curse word. I watched another change come over me. I began to fight everything and everybody. I watched another change come over me. I began to leave my house from one day to 3 weeks at a time. One running down, down. I'm seeing me go down. I don't know if any of you have ever suffered with guilt and remorse the way I did. Because every time I came up off a drunk, I would say, oh my God, I did it again. I did it again, and I didn't want to do it again and again, and I continued to drink. And one of my neighbors pulled me up on the carpet. She says, I'm very much ashamed to live next door to somebody like you. I bought this house to get away from people like you. She says, what is the matter with you? You're blasting records at 2 a.m, you're fighting and cursing, you're dropping out of cab. And I said, Jimma Lee, I suffer with my nerves. And Jimma Lee suggested that I drink rum. Isn't that nice? So I left Jimma Lee standing in my little bitty kitchen, and I ran around to the Empire Liquor Store, and I bought a bottle of rum. Now, I live in Jamaica, Long Island at the time. I'm still trying to find out how in the hell did I wake up in Briarcliff, New York, with the bottle of rum. I don't know how I got up there. A lady took me in off the streets up there into her home. And here's where I became a booze fighter. I'd put a shot in my coffee in the morning. I'd call it Coffee Royal. I would hide the lousy bottle. I don't care where I hid it. I found it because I didn't want it to leak. Jesus, don't leak. You know that. And then every time I found it, I took a swig. And by the time the lady came home, I'd be open and open, and the poor soul didn't know what to do for me. So she sat me down by the fire one night. And she said, you know, Liz, you're a lovely person. She said, but drinking is your problem. And she says, I put my husband out of here for his drinking. And she lectured and she lectured. She filled me with so much guilt and remorse that I wanted to die. Because here I'm up in this godforsaken place. I don't know where I'm at. I'm fighting the booze. And I'm away from my three children. And so I decided, okay, I'll sit in the Catholic church all day just so I wouldn't drink. And that I could peel this lady's potatoes at night and get her dinner started for her. I've got to do a decent thing. You know that. And so what happened? I did. I sat in the church all day. 4 o'clock, I walk out the church. I walk right straight over into the bar. And I say to the bartender, give me one to relax. Not I sat in the church all day, but I have to have a drink to relax. I don't know about anybody else. And then I said, because I'm going to peel this lady's potatoes. Give me another drink to get started. You know, I have to have another one to get started. And when I drank, they gave you the third free drink free. Has anybody had that? Well, see, you don't walk out on a free drink. That's not nice. You don't do that. Then I have to buy one back because it's so important that I look good. And then by the time I get to the fourth or the fifth drink, the hell with her and her potatoes, baby. Let's roll. So, you know, she never got any potatoes from me because I'm on a roll now, see? So, okay, I go back home to New York because my little girl is not eating, my neighbor told me. And when I got back in, I'd lock myself up. Now, Mr. Bailey happened to be a furrier girls by trade. And every time I had a period of dryness when I just couldn't drink anymore, he would make me another new fur coat. I had fur coats like beans. Believe me, I did. And so this one year, he made me the most gorgeous leopard coat you ever laid your eyes on. He threw a party for the job and all. And he brought this leopard coat home, and he threw it out on the bed. And I looked down at that coat, and I hated it. I said he made it so he could spot me anywhere. I gave it away. I wouldn't wear it. In sobriety, I wished I had it many a time, believe me. It was beautiful, beautiful leopard coat. And I continued to drink. Now I began to hit the hospital. Every time you looked at me, I had a new patch, broken fingers, third-degree burns. Girls, please don't ever fry a frozen chicken drunk. I did. Burn up both of my legs. You can see my arms all cut up, putting my hands through window plate glasses. Total insanity. You know I didn't have no trouble with the second step, don't you? None at all. And, of course, I just did so many insane things, putting holes in the walls, burning up furniture, breaking up furniture. And the good sisters in Mary Magdalene Hospital was always saying to me, Mrs. Bailey, as they're patching me up, why don't you go to the alcoholic clinic on a Tuesday morning? It went in this ear and out that ear, and I continued to drink. One morning, I woke up so sick. Oh, my head was coming off my body. I put a raw egg in the beer to think that would help. That was also a meal for me. Whenever I put the raw egg in the beer, I ate a meal, see, because I didn't eat when I drank. And, of course, now I took Anacin's, BC's. I was taking everything. My poor tongue used to stay black. I used to suck them Sin-Sins. I don't know if some of you remember those Sin-Sins. And I thought I was keeping the booze smell down from my body, but I was sucking them Sin-Sins. And, of course, now I'm so sick. And I don't know what to do. And I reach over and grab my Bible off the night table. And I decided that maybe I'll find something in the Bible that will straighten this rotten, filthy life of mine up. Because now I'm being beaten to a pulp where I can't come out of my home. I'm also sleeping down in people's unfinished basements because Mr. Bailey's throwing me out the front door in brown bags and shopping bags. And they're screaming at me, don't drink down there and don't smoke down there. And I'd go back in the day and take care of the children. And, of course, now this particular day when I grabbed the Bible, thinking I was going to find something in it to straighten my life up, what happened to me was that here again, Mr. Bailey spots me with the Bible. And he starts to scream at me, put that Bible down, you hypocrite. Put it down. 20 minutes to an hour, you'll be so drunk, you'll be slapping a kid down, or you'll be hopping a car, or you'll be swinging a corner. And I didn't want to hear his mouth. I had begged Mr. Bailey many times, do not argue with me when I'm drinking. Keep your mouth shut. Shut up. And you know that was impossible, Al-Anons, don't you? Yes, you do. Impossible. And so again, this is the first time I thought of suicide. I literally ran and jumped up into the second floor window. And I'm standing directly in this window. And as I'm ready to throw my body down into the yard, there's a little lady named Nana Baca down in the yard. And she spots me standing in the window. And she's screaming, Mr. Bailey! Mr. Bailey! You better get her! She's going to jump! And I see him come out the next window. And I see his hands come out like this. He says, Nana, will you let that bitch jump? I'll be rid of all my problems, all my troubles. Let that bitch jump. Well, I looked over at him and I wanted to know who the hell did he think he was, you know? I guarantee every one of you I got down out of that window. Got back into that bed and pulled the sheet over me and slipped that one off, you know.
Yeah.
And I kept on drinking. And poor Mr. Bailey used to try to take me to parties and places, and he never could take me anywhere because my party was never over. Never over. And don't take me to a funeral. I'd have a bottle in the basement. I'd have a bottle on the second floor. I'd be chipping in on the third floor, and I'm running all three floors. And Dr. Graninger would say, "Why do you take her to funerals?" Well, he didn't know he couldn't take me to weddings or christenings either. You couldn't take me anywhere that there was booze. And I continued to drink. And Mr. Bailey came to me one night and said, "You know, you're the nicest wife when you're sober. Drunk, you're a Jekyll and a Hyde. Why don't you try this AA? When you desire a drink, run over to the phone, pick up the phone, and call someone to talk you out of the drink." I'm not going into the flowery words of what I said to Mr. Bailey because cursing is my character defect, and I cannot stand up here honestly and tell any of you that I'm perfect in that department, but I have progressed to do better. That I have done. But you know what I told him to do with AA too, don't you? Okay, as long as you know what I thought. So he walked away from me because Dr. Graninger had said to him, "I want you to go home and tell Mrs. Bailey that she's going to drink herself to death. She'll drink herself into a mental institution, or she will drink herself into Alcoholics Anonymous." Now, you must remember that when I came to AA, nobody wanted to be bothered with drunks. I didn't have the halfway houses and the detox units that you have today. There was nothing 40 years ago that you have today. And so it was so true. I was either going to drink myself to death to a mental institution or into AA. I continued to drink another 8 to 10 months. And this is my last drink. I had my last drink July the 11th, 1952, at the age of 31. I was really 13. Mentally, physically, and spiritually, I was beaten to a bottom that I just couldn't go any lower. And I was drinking with hard two-fist drinkers at the VFW hall. I could never stand anybody who took a drink or two and went home. See, I pick up a drink, I leave home, I don't stay. Because, see, I got to drink in peace. I can't stand it if you're looking at me cock-eyed or if your mouth is going. And that silent treatment will really kill you, you know. So, again, there was a lady named Mrs. Lindbaum. And I hadn't seen her since I was 8 years old. And she was coming to sell some insurance for the house. And I never called this really a home. Even though, girls, I had every material thing any woman would want on this earth. I didn't have to work because I was privileged to stay home with my children. I had 3 children before AA. And so what happens is that I didn't let any of the material things do anything for me. And I took it all for granted, really. And my neighbors used to get upset. There she goes with another refrigerator, or there she goes with something else. And, you know, my name was Bitch. I don't know if you know that, you know. But, you know, she's drunk again, and she's late. I would get rid of her if I were you, Mr. Bailey. I used to hear them tell him how to get rid of me. But, he, you know, Mr. Bailey loved me drunk. He'd come down the street just a-whistling, ah-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo. And the people would feel so sorry for the poor man. I got sober and got sorry for him. I did. I really did. Because I said, the stuff that I laid on that man, honey, he could have never laid it on me. I'm going to tell you that right now. See, but I had to get sober to see that. I didn't see it before. And, of course, I wanted to see Miss Lindbaum. I straightened up. It's in July. And the telephone rang, and it was one of the men from the Post. And I heard his voice, and I banged the phone down. He called me back the second time. I said, "Listen, man, don't bug me. There's a lady coming here, and I want to see her. I haven't seen her since I'm 8 years old." I took the phone and banged it again. I went to the store around the corner and I came back. He was on the phone for the third time. He said, do me a favor, Liz, hop a cab. I'll introduce you to the people, I'll put you in the cab, and I'll send you home to your company. I figured, let me do that, because he's going to drive me up a wall. I got in the cab and I went over to the post on 110th and Merrick Road. And the booze started lining up and the jukebox is going and I'm singing, you always hurt the one you love. The one you don't want to hurt at all. Give me another drink. Smile if you're happy. And I could sing them old Weeping Harry songs. Well, as I said, I'm 71 next month and I haven't seen Miss Limbanta yet. I have forgotten what the lady looks like. But that was my pattern. I always started out to do something decent. And once I picked up that first drink, I couldn't tell you what was happening to me after that. Never could I tell you. And so when I woke up, my mom was at the foot of the bed, and my husband was at the other end of the bed. And my mom was screaming to the rooftop, somebody done something to her, and her head is just going, somebody done something to her. And then I look over at Mr. Bailey, and he's got his head going, and he's saying, no, Mom, no, Mom, nobody's done anything to her. She happens to be a very sick girl. Well, he didn't call me bitch. Well, honey, it just hit me. I got up out of that bed, and I went to the basement of that house because he said I was a sick girl. I got in the basement and I stayed in the basement for 2 days praying to die. I wanted out. And I looked up at my oldest son sitting there. He was 12 years old at the time. And I said, Richard, I can't live this way. This is not the way I want to live. And I said, I'm going up on the Long Island Railroad. I'm going to jump in front of a train, and I'm going to end it all. And I started to scream, and, oh, God, please help me. I have never screamed to God so in my whole life. And something said to me, as clear as I'm speaking to you, try this AA that your father has told me about. And I called up AA, and they didn't have anyone to send me. And I got myself together and went into Manhattan at 28th Street and Lexington Avenue was our intergroup. And it was one flight up over a bar. And I said, the hell with AA. And I started in the bar. Then I said, try to get up the stairs again. And I got into the middle of the landing. And as I went to turn to go down into the bar, a lady looked down the stairs at me and she says, are you having trouble? And I said, yes, ma'am. And I ran up the stairs to her. She escorted me into the front part of the office, and she started to tell me about her life. Oh, my God, I got goose pimples and chills. I started to fall off the chair. Who talks about themselves like this? Oh, my mother said put it in the closet, in a drawer, under a rug. Please, don't go out and tell nobody where you got the busted mouth, the black eyes, the fights in your house. Oh, you don't do that. And this woman kept talking, and she kept hitting me between the eyes with her all about. So she said to me, Liz, it's the first drink. I says, oh, come on, sweetie. I've been drinking for 19 years. She said, Liz, when you pick up one drink of any type of alcohol, it is only a matter of time that a compulsion sets up into you that you have to go all the way. Boy, did she hit me. I see myself take 2 drinks on a Monday, great. 2 lousy drinks on a Tuesday, you're looking for me. Wednesday, I drink a whole fifth. Whoo, boy, I drank that fifth and nothing happened. Let me go get me another bottle of that stuff on a Thursday. I'd get another bottle. Friday, I'm knitting without needles. How many of you knitted without needles? But I'm walking up and down and I'm knitting. And I've got to go get that drink to get me back in focus. So I understood her. And she said, we do it 1 5 minutes, 1 10 minutes, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. We do it with sponsor. And we do it with meetings, 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 meetings. And she gave me the choice of 2 meetings. And I decided to get my hair done nice. I don't know about you girls, but my hair used to stay drunk, you know? I tell you, Every time my beautician would fix me, you wouldn't believe it. In 20 minutes, I'd be so drunk. And she said, did you just get out of my chair? You know, I'd curse her out, right? But then, of course, now Mr. Bailey would give me money for clothes. I never could find the clothes. I didn't ever look too tough for them anyway. So I'd drink up that money. So, but this time I'm going to AA, so I get my hair done nicely. I buy me a little two-piece blue suit, and I go off to my first AA meeting. And as I'm walking towards the girls behind the coffee counter, they looked up at me, and I'm only mimicking them. They said, you don't look like an alcoholic. I said, what the hell did I get myself into? And let me get the hell out of here. And I start running out of the room. And when I came to AA, they always kept two people at the door. Two people were always at the door to welcome you in here because, as I said, 40 years ago was the last resort. There was nothing for the drunk. Nothing. And so as I'm headed out the door, this man slaps me over here on the shoulder and he says to me, what's the matter with you? Where are you going? I said, those girls said I don't look like an alcoholic. I don't know what an alcoholic looks like, but I'm about to lose my mind, my home, my children, and everything through drinking. He said, have a seat, sweetie. You in the right place. And they put two tables together that night, and each one of the members sat around and shared their strength, their hope, and their experience with me. And it is but for the grace of God, but for the grace of God. Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Alateen, Alatot, OA, GA, PA, NA, EA, FA. The only A that I haven't spoke at is Sex Anonymous. And I refuse to go to Seattle, Washington to put my sex life on tape, baby, to come across the United States. No, I can't do that, because I still have a family, okay? Oh, yeah, still have a family. So that meant that just last Saturday, I celebrated 40 years away from my last drink. And I do it one day at a time. And I thank God that they told me not to stay sober for anybody but for myself. Do not stay sober for anyone but for yourself. If I had to stay sober for my mother, I would have been drunk, drunk, drunk. My mother did not like me telling you I was an alcoholic. She'd rather call me, good morning, Reverend Bailey. How are you? And where are you speaking at next, Reverend Bailey? It took my mom 29 and a half years to tell me to stay with them A's, whatever they are. And I don't plan to give up these A's. I have been sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous over half of my life, which is so fantastic to give me this fantastic life. Sitting for one lousy hour and a half in these rooms that I put in the bar, in the streets. Because I really came into AA through the streets. I didn't come through the bedroom. Came through the streets, beaten and all, waking up where I didn't know where I was half the time. And so again, Mr. Bailey couldn't stand me sober. He took the first 10 years, and that cat worked overtime to get me back into the streets of New York. But you didn't tell me to stay sober for Mr. Bailey. He did everything in his power to get me back out there. I had the honor and privilege of speaking for our late co-founder, Bill Wilson, 30 years ago. And 2,700 people were there that night. And Mr. Bailey shook my hand and said I did a good job on the dais. But when we arrived back at the house, he banged every pot on the stove and he screamed that he had to get rid of me, that he couldn't stand me and this sobriety another minute. And I had over 10 years of sobriety at the time. I used the third and the 11th step at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's our decision maker. No man makes decisions for us in these rooms, but your 3 and 11. And God spoke to me just like I'm speaking to you. If you pick up one drink, Liz, you don't have Liz. You pick up one drink, you don't have Mr. Bailey. And when I pick up one drink, I'm not in that house. As I told you, I'm out in the streets again, being beaten, not knowing what's happening to me, hit in hospital, and had three beautiful children that suffered under this. I'm guilty for my children's illness as of today, because they came up a very hard way with a drunken mother. And thank God Mr. Bailey did work every day. That's why I've stood on these platforms for years and told you how I love Mr. Bailey, because he kept the house together. He kept the children together. He kept everything together. Girls, I left Mr. Bailey 30 years ago. I moved to a room and kitchenette, and then to an apartment. In 40 years, I could write a book, but I'm not writing a book because every drunk I knew wrote a book, got drunk, so I'm not writing no books. Don't look for me to write no books. No books. I watched them way back there writing books. And don't write no speeches out in AA. This is a language of the heart. I don't know what God is bringing out of me tonight. And anything you don't like, take it up with your higher power. Don't come near me with it. I'll tell you that right now. Anything you don't like. And so I went back 6 years ago to take care of Mr. Bailey in his last days. For the fact that you taught me something so beautiful that I'm going to take to my grave with me. You taught me what real love is all about. You said real love looks for nothing in return. Real love looks for nothing in return. And I was so grateful that I could go back and make Mr. Bailey's last days really good for him. And girls, I'm back in my home now, and it's paid for. Isn't it nice? See? God took me out of that home for 24 years, but he brought me around the circle right back into it, thank God. I have an older son who hates my living guts. He said he would never forgive me or forget me. But here God gives me sons like Stan and JJ and all, so many, Russell and Jimmy. And I have so many sons in AA that just love me and treat me like a queen. I've got Ernie who just waits on me hand and foot. You know why I stay young, don't you? I hang out with the young folks, honey. I love the young people in AA. I don't do anything with senior citizens yet. I'm sorry. I just swear I'm not going to die for that 50-cent lunch, I tell you. They moan and they groan. God love them because I love them, you know, but I just can't handle it. I come out so depressed, and that's not for me. No, so I deal with the young people. I have Lisa, and I have daughters, too, that are so beautiful in AA. And so, again, Richard hasn't spoken to me, but I love my Richie. He's 52 years old. He lives in California. And I believe so strongly that one day he's going to knock on my door, and I'm going to welcome him into my home. And I'm going to throw that cat a party. The only thing I'm not going to do is put diamonds on his fingers because he's not that prodigal to me, you know. I know where he's at, you know. But I don't bother Richie. I leave Richie alone. I had a handsome son named Dennis. Dennis was an addict and an alcoholic. And I used to say to Dennis, which I say to the young people, the right road may be hard, Robert. It may be hard, but you'll be the winner. The easy road, the price is heavy. And my son, it's 22 years ago, June 25th, that he was shot and killed in between two houses. He left a beautiful wife and two children. I have a daughter, Judy. She was 5 years old when I stopped drinking. Judy does not remember me as a drunk. Thank God for that, because she'd whip me to death with it. Judy's had 5 mental breakdowns. And today she's out of the 5th one, and she's doing well. She's working back in her home and with her children, which is so great. I was raising my 2 grandchildren for Judy in my 60s. And I used to say to you, well, how did Sarah have a baby at 90? Because I was having a hell of a job in my 60s raising a baby. But I did raise Robert to 4 years old and Rabia to 8. I have a beautiful AA baby who's 36 years old. And I named her after AA, Adrian Anita. Because without AA, she'd have never been around, and you know that. But today, she's a Muslim for about 15 years, and she wears a shroud, she covers her beautiful face, and she comes down to Queens twice a year to get her meats, from Boston, and we walked into the A&P. I had a black hat on and a black coat, and the cashier says, "Oh, it's a stick-up, it's a stick-up." Well, I got hysterical, and I went to the floor of the A&P laughing. So coming back on the subway, she says, "Mother," oh, she speaks so proper since she lives in Boston, you know. And she says, "Mother, are you accepting me as a Muslim?" I said, "You can join Hudism, Buddhism. I really don't care whose ism, as long as it helps you be a better person. You want to have a happy sobriety? Use that slogan, live and let live. I am through raising children. I'm not raising any more children. I allow my children to live their lives any way they choose and serve whom they may." And that's what I love about AA. It tells you to find your own higher power. That's what's so beautiful. And again, I have 12 grandchildren that I see by appointment only. Believe me. And I have one great-grand that I never dreamt that I would ever see or have in life. I admit and I accept and I surrender to the fact that I am an alcoholic. I have no choice to pick up a drink. I used to run around AA, and first of all, when I first came to AA, I came off the bar stool. I was wearing the slits in my dresses and low-cut backs, and I had furs thrown across me, and I was shaking my little self all over AA, and the men were just trailing me because there wasn't hardly any women in AA when I got here. But Father Kelly sent me a message, asked that broad what she's doing in AA. And I had to find out that I wasn't dressing right. And so I had to learn how to dress in AA. I've had to learn how to do a lot of things in AA to make me a better woman and a person. And so again, I came to believe that there was a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And to me, it meant that I better change my thinking and actions if I wanted to stay sober. And I made that decision. It took me 5 years in AA to make a decision. I cursed God the first 5 years of AA, because here I got sober and all hell was breaking loose with me. And I couldn't understand why this hell was breaking loose with me and I'm sober. And it took migraine headaches, deep depressions, isolation, and I cried a lot. And at the end of 5 years, it dawned on me that my sobriety was a gift. And if I wanted to keep this gift, I better let a higher power come into my life. And I slowly began to put one hand in God's. And the other one I always had in AA, because I always made 7 meetings a week and 3 times on Sunday. And I picked myself a tough sponsor. And I used to whine and cry to this woman. And she would say to me, "Listen, Liz Bailey, AA don't need you, but you need AA." I was just crying. And then she'd tell me again, "Sit on the pot or get up off it." She didn't say it that nice, you know. But I'm happy she was tough with me. If she had pampered me, she'd have pampered me out the door. But we don't treat everybody alike. You treat people accordingly. And so again, here again, I keep growing, going through a lot of pain. And the greatest spiritual awakening I could have was to learn that God was within me. Greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. And then I start on a truth quest. I start going in and out of churches, in and out of prayer meetings. Looked like I was hungry for the word. And I finally, at the age of 25 years of sobriety, witness all. My life looking for some. In the name of Jesus, not in the name of any religion. And that's whom I serve every day. And it took me eight operations in 22 years. I've been cut to pieces in sobriety. I've been to death's door 8 times. I went up and had 3 operations in 6 weeks. The doctor says, "You've got cancer." He says, "I'm only going to give you 6 months to live." I said, "Please don't talk to me like that. I'm in a fellowship that teaches me I live one day at a time. I'm now 25 years an arrested cancer patient, and you see my motor's running fine, sir. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't let nobody tell me about me. No, no, you don't tell me about me. I've been cut from ear to ear with a heart attack. I didn't have any voice, and I said, okay, God, you through with me talking? He's not through with me. He brought me back so powerful that I have to stand here right now and say, cool it. Because if I let this power come up that's in me, you come up half them chairs. I've seen it. I've seen it. I have seen it. That's why I had to learn to stand here and say, cool it. And you know, it tells you in your 11th step, where is the power? Within you. The power within you to carry it out. Isn't it the truth? It's right here for us. And yes, it is. Yes, it is. And so what it is, today I can take in my inventory. I've taken that fourth step many, many times because the longer I'm sober, the more comes to the surface. He only gives you what you know you can handle. And please don't let nobody tell you, why aren't you on the fourth step and why aren't you on the fifth step? You grow in here at God's plan, not man's plan. Believe me when I tell you. And when you get it with God's plan, it works beautiful. Mine is just fine. I see some of you trying to rewrite the big book. I see some of you want to take God out of this program, but it'll never work. It'll never work because that big book is 57 years old. And it's worked for 57 years old. You've got 28 days and want to come in here and change everything. I think you got some nerve. I don't buy you doing that at all. No way. No. You know what this whole program is about? Living it. Living it. I'm not knocking reading at all. Reading helped save my life many times. But you must live this life and apply these 12 steps and traditions into your life. That's what I do to keep my life going so beautiful. And again, never forget, I've had pain to gain, and I've had to fight for the victory that I have today. And my main cry for many, many years, drunk and sober, was loneliness. I cried a loneliness all my life, looking for someone to love me, to understand me, to do something with me, and I've never been able to find it. But I can tell you what I did find. I found your love, and you loved me until I could love myself. And I thank God for each one of you. I usually look out at audience and say, you light up my life. You're the ones that gave me the hope when I didn't know that there was any hope for me. I thank God for every member of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon most of all. Al-Anon has taught me how to live with people, how to accept people, how to know that I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And Al-Anon told me not to let you have more power over me than my higher power. Nobody has power over me but my higher power. And it's wonderful for me to learn that. You know, I made amends to myself first. I had to love me to love you. I have to get it for me to give it to you. And otherwise, it's no good. And I've made amends to my loved ones, thank God. There's only one person I haven't made amends to in 40 years, and that's my bartender. And I'm not going to give him the $2. I sent his children to college. I bought him the finest Cadillac every year. And I want to take one of you to Vermont and show you the house I bought him. It would injure me to give him the $2. Never mind him. And you know what? He closed down the minute I stopped drinking. He hasn't been there in 40 years. It's an athletic club. I was keeping that place going, sitting in there every day. You know I was, and buying him everything. And that's what I tell the drug addicts. You're putting gold chains around people's necks and $175 sneakers. You got them riding New York with all BMWs and the best cars, and you're dying, and them cats is living. You know you can come in AA and become a millionaire and live the grandest life that you ever wanted to live. And it'll get so good in here, it'll scare the hell out of you. And when it gets that good, watch it. Because a lot of us don't know how to handle good. We blow it every time when we get the good. And I would always say to you in the world, attitude plus gratitude keeps you in recovery. Please, dear God, find something to be grateful about every day. I have so much to be grateful about. Just to get up and say, good morning, God, instead of, oh, God, it's another morning. You know? And I haven't had but one sick bout in 20 years. One! Think of it! Because I found the key. It took me 20 years in here to find the key. I'm going to share this key with you and I'm going to get off here. Let me tell you, after the heart attack, I went home and I sat and I turned my life and my will over and I found the key to my life. And the key to my life is to seek God first and His kingdom and His righteousness for all things to be added unto me. And you know, I had one sick bout and I went to Al-Anon. I'm not blaming this on Al-Anon though, but I ate some chocolate mousse. And I didn't realize that I had stones. Don't eat no mousse if you got stones, I'll tell you that. Because that mousse will kill you. It'll kill you. And I laid in LaGuardia for 10 days. And those stones, they shipped me to another hospital, put me to sleep, went down my throat. And the stones turned to gravel and sand. And so when they tell you in here, this too shall pass, they pass. Okay? But that's the only time. And you see, I don't claim illness anymore, really. I don't claim illness. He said, you got arthritis in your left knee? It'll stay there. Because I'm not walking around telling you I've got arthritis and I'll need a cripple chain and all this kind of stuff. Uh-uh. It's there, but I don't claim it. And I keep going. Okay? Thank God for each one of you. You've been beautiful with me this weekend. I've enjoyed it. Janet, I don't want to forget you from Jersey. You came all the way too, and I love you. I just broke down and cried when I saw Janet here the other night. And she's been in my life for how many years now, Janet? Huh? 17 years she's been in my life, doing good. And you know, it's so good to me when I see them come in and stay and live this beautiful life. Marge and George, and there's a Francis that came to the airport that picked me up and waited and catered to me from the day I got off the plane to here. Thank you, Francis, and your husband also. I hope I didn't leave anybody out, but I do thank each one of you. One of my members were coming out from work with a pocket full of money, and the guy said, stick him up! He said, man, don't you see I got a disease? And the guy ran from him. He said, Liz, he didn't even wait for me to tell him I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, I hated that word, disease. And I remember saying to Mr. Bailey, what am I going to tell my friends when they ask me to have a drink? He said, tell them you got a disease. I said, like hell I'm walking around telling people I got a disease. I looked it up in my dictionary, and it means just at ease, as Bob said last night so nicely, with oneself. I readily tell you, I have the disease of alcoholism. If Liz Bailey ever picks up one drink, I would go up like paper, and I would never make it back. Because, you see, it wouldn't be the drink that would kill me. It would be the guilt and the remorse that would kill me. Because I know, oh God, do I know where the answer lies. It lies, and the solution is in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to your meetings and go to the meeting you don't want to go to. That's the one you get the zinger every time. Find yourself a sponsor because it's a we program, just like the theme is. We're all in here together and we can do together what I could never do alone. I did not come 40 years by myself. I came through beautiful people in here, my sponsor and many beautiful, beautiful people. And there again, don't tell me you can't find a sponsor out of 2.5 million people. There's got to be somebody good for you in this room, in these rooms, believe me. And go to meetings and then pass it on. I'm almost like Dr. Bob and them. Pass it on because it's so true. In giving it away, you keep it. And in giving it away, you receive the many blessings. I thank you all. I hope you will take my love home with you. I hope you continue to enjoy this fantastic weekend. And I want to thank you for your love. It's the love and the hugs that have saved my life. And people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. And I need you. I need you more today than I did 40 years ago. Believe me. And I take all the help I can get. You want to help me up and downstairs? Come on, honey. Anything you want to do with me, I take that kind of help. I had to learn to take help instead of being so independent. And again, if I, Liz Bailey, Like my daughter says, oh, there she goes to save the world. No, I'm not out to save the world. I just want to reach one of you on my mission this weekend. And if I, Liz Bailey, can just touch one of you, then I, Liz Bailey, I have not lived in vain. Thank you so much.